in Tuscany, we have a very it's distinct way to tell if somebody is from Tuscany is that they don't pronounce the hard C. So K becomes H. So if you want them to say a Coke with a short straw, they say una Coca-Cola con la canucha corta.
How would that be in Italian without with the C?
Una Coca-Cola con la canucha corta.
Yeah. And say it Tuscan.
Una Coca-Cola con la canucha corta.
Yeah, and in fact, we're not Americans. Noi siamo americani.
Americani.
Americani che bevono Coca-Cola.
Okay. And another tongue twister?
Oh, God.
Oh. I know one from Trent.
No, but that one's not Tuscan.
No, I don't know a Tuscan tongue twister.
Yeah, 33 Trentini entrano a Trento, tutte 33 tortellando. Oh, my gosh. But the una Coca-Cola con la canucha colorata is the best one to show that you're a Tuscan.
You've just demoralized me. I can't learn anything, though.
That's okay. We'll get you some wine afterwards.
It helps.
And then it'll roll right off your tongue. Galicia is Spain's Celtic-flavored northwest corner. It includes the pilgrim destination of Santiago de Compostela, quaint villages, and a hardy rural heritage that offers a distinctly verdant option for a Spanish getaway. We're going to explore Galicia right now with Spanish guides Federico García Barroso and Agustín Sarriza. Agustín and Federico, thanks for joining us.
Thank you
for welcoming us.
Thank you.
So, Federico, you're from Madrid, but what's your connection with Galicia?
Well, actually, my family name. We are all actually essentially my family from Madrid City, but our family name is Barroso. Barroso is coming from Galicia, northwest Spain.
Okay. And to you, if you think about Galicia, how does it distinguish from the rest of Spain?
Well, I would say that Galicia is our secret garden, you know. It's one of those places in Spain you see that wow, you really enjoy life. People are super friendly, you see. It is not the stereotype of Spain. We don't really find there. The sun is not shining every day of the year.
It's rainy and it's Celtic.
Exactly. I mean, we have some Celtic roots in Galicia, you see, and it's a little bit rainy. But consequently, we have beautiful green mountains and rocky beaches and friendly people and seafood. And you know, it's
lots to see and do, quite inviting. And Agustín, you're from Basque country, which is right next to Galicia.
Yes.
What is your connection with Galicia?
Well, I've been there many times. For a long, long time. So I like the nature in that part of the country. It's beautiful. It's kind of a paradise place with all the green shades, the rolling hills, the rivers flowing, the coastline. It's been a big place for, even in the summer, it's not as crowded as in the rest of Europe even. Yeah. It's inexpensive.
It's inexpensive.
Inexpensive, yeah, yes. Right. And it's a great place for enjoying the food, the wine, nature.
So if you're thinking about the characteristics of Galicia, if you're vacationing there from neighboring parts of Spain, what do you think of in Galicia?
Well, I'm thinking of the rural villages in the countryside. I'm thinking of the fishing villages. I'm thinking of the food, the seafood, the shellfish, the great white wine. There's the variety Alvarinho. It's also well known. People enjoy it very much and we like it. It's refreshing. Some has some connections with the white wine we produce in the Basque Country. The Chacolí that some people are familiar with. The pilgrimage to Santiago would be a good reason to go there and go across the whole state of Galicia and get to know the people, as Federico was saying, and get to know about these Celtics' heritage.
So you mentioned some of the villages are particularly charming and inviting. What are a couple of names of towns that we should remember?
Well, on the Camino, you find Osebreiro. Mm-hmm. That can be a very interesting town that I would recommend you to stop before reaching Santiago, and also passing Santiago, Finisterre, along the coastline.
So everybody gets to Santiago, but you could go further to actually get to the coastline, and then you have some worthwhile stops.
Yes, the Camino can continue for three stages all the way to the coast, to the edge with the ocean, the Atlantic Ocean, and see actually the Campo de Estrellas, Compostela, the Starfield.
The Starfield?
Yes.
Because why would you see it there? You mean the skies, the Milky Way?
The Milky Way.
That's better to see it away from the city?
Yes. Oh, okay. And be at the edge with the ocean.
Oh, right at the edge of the earth with the ocean. And you said it's three stages beyond Santiago. Does that mean three days of walking?
3 days of walking the pilgrimage.
Oh, okay.
So it's kind of a 20 miles a day of walk, and you can continue to the very, very, very end.
Federico, when we talk about Galicia, Agustín mentioned Celtic influence. How does that show itself? I mean, first of all, this Galicia, it's the part of Spain in the northwest. It's a part that is famous for its major city, Santiago de Compostela, and that's famous because people go there on this long pilgrimage. But apart from the pilgrimage, Galicia is ethnically different. It's Celtic. How does that show itself in the people, in the tempo of life, in the cuisine, and so on?
Totally, I can tell you. I usually go every summertime. I go to Galicia. My parents, they have a beautiful house in Padrón, not far from Santiago, St. James, and the famous place of those pimientos, those Padrón peppers. Yeah, it's all about the food. It's the quality of the food, you see. And ethnically, we have to find there in Galicia many blonde people with blue eyes, something that is not easy to find other places in Spain. So ethnically, it's so obvious that, you know, those people can have some Celtic roots, you see. And you can really see that, that's quite obvious. But it's all about the tempo. People live, you know, in an easier way. They have another pace, which is wonderful. You see, it's just wonderful. They just go in a different pace, and people, you can see how people try to enjoy life. You see, I can feel that in Galicia.
Is there a connection historically with Cornwall and Ireland because they're Celtic brothers and sisters?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can even tell how nowadays they have some summer festivals with some Viking and Celtic roots that you can actually see. Yeah, yeah.
Our guides to Galicia, northwest Spain, are Agustín Cerisa, who lives further east along the coast in Basque Country in San Sebastian. That's his home base for hiking, mountain bike, kayak, and surfing expeditions. And Federico García Barroso, who lives in Madrid and has family connections to Galicia. They both specialize in introducing Spain to American visitors, including its less touristed corners, where their fellow Spaniards might go for an escape, like the region we're exploring right now, Galicia. If you think about the Celtic influence, Agustín, describe some of the music. I remember it seemed like a cross between flamenco and river dance to me.
You will hear a lot of bagpipe blowing.
Bagpipes, yeah.
Yeah, bagpipes everywhere. And the dancing also has this Celtic influence, something you've seen in other Celtics. Yeah. Celtic territories, that's something you'll see definitely.
Yeah. And if you talk about the food, something rustic about Galicia is the bread and the cheese.
Yes, and also the beef meat, the cattle from Galicia is well known in the rest of Spain.
And respected in Spain, huh?
Yes, yes. Also the octopus with paprika pepper.
That was something that they're boiling it right in the markets.
Yeah.
They pull it out of the hot water and they chop, chop, chop.
You just need to chop it, add the paprika, some olive oil, and you're ready.
Oh. Just when you said that, my heart started pitter-pattering. I mean, because I forgot all about that until right now. But those are the experiences. Federico, you're in the marketplace in Santiago de Compostela. Mm-hmm. What's an experience that you might have if you're a good traveler in the market?
Yeah, actually, what I love, the cheese, Galician cheese is so soft and so good. And Galician bread, nothing better than get a piece of bread and a piece of cheese, you see, and a nice glass of white wine, Albariño. A little bit of baked octopus with that soft paprika or those Padrón peppers, you see. The food is so good and so easy to eat anywhere.
Right there, it's so elemental. It's just beautiful local ingredients with tradition.
Hmm.
Describe the octopus to me when you go to the market. You've got the man cooking it right there, boiling it.
Actually, we have some places that are called pulperias. Would be a kind of a octopus place where they just bake. You see, they just boil, excuse me, octopus, you see. And people are just, actually have summer festivals about specifically about
they cut it with scissors, don't
the
they?
Way of cutting the octopus with those scissors, you see, and to eat and to share, you see, boiled octopus and baked potatoes with a little bit of that soft, not spicy, by the way, just soft paprika.
Yeah.
You see, and that is just an excuse to socialize, to meet friends, to eat octopus and wine, you see.
So you get a wooden platter, the man cuts it with scissors, the octopus is just snip, snip, snip,
exactly.
Snip, snip, bunch of little bite-sized pieces of octopus, and you got a
slides.
Toothpick, bam.
Exactly, and that is so, so easy for everybody.
Something else in the market, you can buy percebes, which are the barnacles, and they're quite expensive, but you buy it in the market, and they're much more affordable. And then next door, there's a little cafe that will boil your percebes for you.
Exactly. That is what they do. It's actually quite common. And barnacles are quite expensive all over Spain. But if you just go there, you go to those markets, you can get those barnacles. That is something, a kind of experience, I guess, for any American or Canadian traveler in Spain, you see. And it's delicious. Take them. Go to that place, boil those barnacles, eat them with a nice glass of wine, and keep
moving. So you take
moving.
It to the little bar, the cafe, and they expect to take what you bought in the market, and they'll boil it for you, put it on their plate.
Absolutely.
You sit on their table, you buy their wine, and you've got a treat.
Yeah.
Agustín, explain the percebes.
Percebes, the barnacles are growing in their box, and it is a very difficult and dangerous thing to go down the cliff and start collecting all those barnacles from the rocks. If you see any pictures or if you have a chance to see a video about these people that are risking their lives to collect them in bags and then come back to land. And so that's why they're so expensive.
So you pay a lot of money because people risked their lives to get you those barnacles.
Because the waves are crashing into those rocks. So they have to be quick as the tide goes out or as the waves are turning back. to go collect the barnacles and then escape from the waves.
If there was an award for the food that is both the ugliest and the tastiest, I think the barnacles would be in competition.
Yes, yeah. Yes, they say there's a kind of a small penis.
Small penis? Little penis. They do look like a gross little penis, and you break it off of the shell. Yes.
You break the kind of the nail.
The nail, yeah.
And then you peel it, and you suck on it. Yeah. So, I mean, and it's very tasty.
Let's stop there, because up until now, I have a delightful feeling about the barnacles. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking with Agustin Sarisa and Federico Garcia Barroso, and we're talking about Galicia in the northwest of Spain. Agustin, I know that you love the outdoors, and there's some rugged coastline in Galicia. Is there much of a surfing industry there?
Yes, there is surfing on the beaches. There's sea kayaking and other water sports that can be played in these big rias, these long rias. There are rivers that are going inland a long way, so they were protected from the big storms.
Okay.
And then you find beaches which are very isolated. You can just go there and hang out on your own, where you can go surfing too.
Now, I want to talk about the Camino de Santiago. That means the way, a pilgrimage, back in the Middle Ages, all the way to Santiago. And Santiago was named for St. James. And when the Muslim Moors took over Spain in the 8th century, all of Christendom had to unite and try to push the Moors back into Africa. And my understanding is they just said, well, St. James is there, and he's buried in Santiago. Everybody on their horses, let's go, you know, to try to get a reason for everybody to rally around that. So they pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed back, and now they've freed it. It's Santiago de Compostela, and that is the destination of these pilgrimages to get to the tomb of St. James. Federico, tell us just briefly about that pilgrimage trail.
Yeah, it is the story of, well, we think from those 12 apostles, you see, St. James was the one who had to evangelize Spain. We know that. But we have no historical proof to say that he was physically in Spain. We assume that his bones were found there 8 centuries after his death, and the Milky Way in Latin language, Campus Stellae, Compostela, means the Milky Way is telling everybody else that down there something important is happening. The bones of St. James, obviously, as a political answer to those crusades, I mean, those Islam people in southern Spain.
So that would fire up the Christians. They'd want to go down there and free the bones of St. James to get that back into Christian territory instead of Muslim territory. But today, people walk across northern Spain. They walk all the way from Paris or the Pyrenees Mountains, and they get to Santiago, and their goal is Santiago. And there we've got the tomb of St. James, and to be on the square in Santiago, which is a great town anyways, and to see these pilgrims come in and to be overwhelmed with joy after they've finished their journey, whether they're journeying as Christians, Catholics, Orthodox, whatever, or just people that want to be out and get closer to themselves or nature or God in their own way. It's amazing, phenom. And they get there, and then what is the ritual when you get to the cathedral?
Well, the ritual, regardless if you're a religious person or not, is just to finally find the Obradoiro Square, and you face that spectacular facade and the big cathedral, and then St. James is waiting for you. You just go and you meet the saint, and you, in a humble way, you just say thank you to St. James Santiago, you see, and that is actually the end of this process, you see. That is something really, really magic, really beautiful.
Agustin, what does the pilgrimage to Santiago mean?
The pilgrimage, for many people, is the moment for soul-searching.
Soul-searching.
So that's what happens for, you know, many people do it. They've taken a break in their lives, and they were like to, they have, some of them have religious reasons, some others they don't, but they all want to go into the inner selves and think. As you walk in and you're visiting these small towns, all these churches and monasteries and convents where the pilgrims, the original pilgrims, were stopping, people have the time to think, relax, and plan the future.
And it was a very big deal in the Middle Ages, then it died out, and now it's become a very big deal again. And there's refuges all along the way where you can sleep cheaply, and there's very friendly people that'll serve the pilgrims and the hikers. And the spirit in Santiago de Compostela, the culmination of that journey, is really just to experience it, whether you're a pilgrim or not. It's a I like to be on that square in the morning when the pilgrims arrive. We're talking about Galicia, and it's also part of northern Spain. Just very briefly, we've got Cantabria. Is that part of Galicia, or what is Cantabria?
It's actually, we talk about the Cantabric range. It's northern Spain.
Right.
It's essentially the Cantabric range. We go from the Basque country, we keep going to Cantabria, then Asturias, and finally Galicia.
Okay, so different regions in the north of Spain.
With very similar weather, geographical conditions, people, you see, but just divided in three sections. Yeah.
And the Picos de Europa, Agustín, what is this sort of natural wonderland in the north of
Spain? This is a Sierra mountain range, super close to the ocean, mm-hmm. can be seen from the coastline. You can be on the beach and see the snow caps of the mountains. Beautiful place, can be compared to the Pyrenees Mountains. Beautiful place for hiking, enjoying the outdoors, and enjoying the cheese there, the cheese of Cabrales, for example.
Wow. And one thing you've got in this area are the caves of Altamira, prehistoric caves.
Yes.
And tell me, that's something very, very unique in Spain.
Yes, it is. These are caves that have these paintings, archaeological paintings dated to 15,000 years. And
15,000 years old.
Yeah.
Five times as old as the pyramids.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
And you can actually, is it a copy cave or the original cave?
It's a copy cave.
So there is the original cave, and then there's a very, very accurate copy cave, because everybody can't go in and see the original one, or it will, the humidity and the excitement and the flash bulbs will all do the damage.
Now you can set an appointment. There are really limited tickets to see the original one.
Yeah.
But what you find in Altamira, just a few minutes away from this town of Santillana del Mar, you can see this archaeology museum and the copy of the cave.
So that's Altamira, and you can see that also when you're exploring the north of Spain. Federico?
Yeah, Altamira is really unique, but we have to say that the copy, the replica, is really, really amazing, yeah. Really well done.
When I go to those copy caves, because they're the same thing in France, I do not feel like I've been denied the opportunity. It's a beautiful, it's a mystical, almost spiritual experience to be there with human beings who painted something 15,000-20,000 years ago.
There is a, Rick, there is a movie played just a short time ago by Antonio Banderas called Altamira. Uh-huh. And it's telling you specifically the moment in those 1800s, the moment in which they discovered that gem. And they just thought that guy was just cheating the others, you see. And his little daughter said, "Oh, Daddy, I can see bulls here. I can see bulls." And they then discovered that gem, you know. That moment, you see, in which they discover, that is also fascinating.
And we can go there today. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been discussing Galicia in the northwest of Spain. Our guides are Federico Garcia Barroso and Agustín Sariza. And Agustín, there's an actual language. When I go to an ATM machine in Spain, one of the buttons next to España, next to Castilian, next to Catalan, is Gallego.
Gallego, correct. This is a Romance language. It's a kind of a mix between Portuguese and Spanish language.
Okay, and is it what is the history of that language as far as how people speak it, Federico?
Well, we are all in Spain. We speak several languages. We all have a common denominator, which is Castilian, Spanish, okay. But then we also have Basque, Catalan, and Galician, which is, by the way, phonetically, is a combination of Portuguese and Spanish. But it's actually an own language. It's not actually a dialect. Okay.
Is Madrid concerned if people are speaking this because Madrid wants everybody to be Spanish?
Right now, actually, people speak fluently. You see, languages without any kind of prejudices and without any kind of problems. And when I go to Galicia, I go there many times. I meet my friends speaking Galician. I answer in Spanish language because I don't speak the language, but we perfectly understand each other without any problem.
Well, I'd like to say thank you to both of you, and I'd like to say it in the Gallego language. Agustín, how do we say that?
Thank you would be...
Moitas gracias.
Moitas gracias.
Moitas gracias, which is quite similar to Portuguese. Yeah.
Moitos gracias. Yeah, not muchas gracias, but moitos.
Moitos, exactly.
Moitos. All right, well, moitos gracias.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Gracias.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Rick Steves Europe in Edmonds, Washington by Kim Tatton, Kasmira Hall, and Donna Bardsley. Affiliate relations are by Sheila Gerzoff. Website uploads are managed by Andrew Wakeling. Jerry Frank wrote and performed our theme music. Find out when other radio stations air Travel with Rick Steves. You can find a list of our affiliates at ricksteves.com/radio.